Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
Today we are going to talk about like strong emotions and the process that we go through when we are processing those strong emotions. Erin did an event at the Rage Room that was an Axe Me Out in Longmont, and that was with the Grief Collective. And she's going to tell us a little bit about her experience and about the event and the purpose of the event and what it was about. And we are going to take that experience and just explore how we process strong emotions, how we express and those type of things in coaching and other aspects of our lives. So Erin, can you tell our listeners about this event and the Grief Collective and what you experienced when you were in the Rage Room?
Yeah, I feel like there's so much to unpack. So I think I'll just go back to the beginning. The Grief Collective is a group of businesses here in Longmont that really has a touch point with grief in very different ways for supporting people in the process, whether that's before a loss, during a loss, and after a loss. So we've gotten together, these businesses, to host local events. And our first event was held at the Rage Room at Axe Me Out here in Longmont. And it was everybody's first experience with a Rage Room. And so before going into the actual Rage Room itself, I led a quick, just guided reflection that helped us ground into what is our intention? What do we want to let go of? And how can that show up in the room? And also, how can we be open to whatever else shows up in the room itself? So, you know, jumping off from there, it felt pretty manageable, pretty typical in terms of how I'm used to processing things with clients in different ways. Then is where it got a little bit more interesting, in that we went into the Rage Room. There could be up to four people in at once, and there were four of us in there all at once. And you wear a full face covering and gloves. And we had brought various breakables, including this, like some big drawers that I had from my daughter's bed that we no longer use and was really in bad shape. And then somebody brought in a toilet as well. And then there were the other breakables that were available to us through the organization Axe Me Out. So you can imagine this room that is just like these wooden walls, and you go in and people have written a lot of things they want to let go of and a lot of anger and rage that they held or do continue to hold. And so that was a little bit shocking to read some of what's up on the walls. And of course, you don't have to do that, but appreciated what the owner, Tina, did for Axe Me Out, because there was this really strongly written words about someone that were just not kind. I mean, beyond anger, beyond rage. And so she has those covered up at least. So you don't have to like, you know, see that the whole time you're in there, or that you're, that's what you're kind of facing. So we get in there and we see that space like this. It smells like sawdust. It smells like wood. It smells like, you know, just like what you'd expect in like a shop class or something like that. And they have a loudspeaker over the room that we hooked up my music to, and we just put on what we could find. Really, it was like called Pissed Off Playlist or something on Spotify. All those 90s angst songs that you can think of, they were on that list. And it was just really loud. And so you felt kind of, I felt kind of energized and like, okay, I'm going to hit some things. This actually feels really good. And so we went in, and then we also could have a camera hanging on the wall if we preferred to film the event. We didn't do that. Somebody else on the outside was kind of taking pictures and filming just to have information and be able to share out for marketing purposes. So there are four of us in there, ranging in age from probably 15 to 55. And we all have our weapon of choice, for lack of better words. I mean, you can switch it up. There's sledgehammers, golf clubs, baseball bats. But I really stuck with the baseball bat. And I just could not stop swinging that thing on that drawer. And this is IKEA furniture. So really, it came apart pretty easily, you know. It just like crumbled. And I just kept going and going. I got in the mood, like just in it and really, really in it. And it, I just listened to my body, I wasn't trying to be so cerebral about it, right? So I was just like hitting this thing over and over and over again. And then once we destroyed that piece, they brought in the toilet and that thing shattered like crazy. And I ended up with like a little bit of a piece in my mouth, like just a tiny piece, but it was just like, I wouldn't recommend toilets in the rage room, because then one of the participants got toilet glue all over like their hand and shoe. So we will not bring in a toilet again, probably. But as we're, you know, doing this, it feels like, you know, ever in some ways, but you go in up to 15 minutes. And I think I was out of there in like 12 minutes. My body was just done. It was done. And as I waited for people to come out and for us to do our closing reflection exercise, I just felt so like, I felt like this elevation of happiness. I felt so content and happy. So it's interesting because that's for me what happened right after. However, you know, after we do the closing, the reflection, and then the coming days, my body the next day hurt so bad and my hands hurt so bad. I definitely would warn people to like be more mindful of what you're really feeling in your body and probably step it back a few notches and don't like hit and swing things for 15 minutes straight, like take some breaks maybe. But it was interesting because that next day I just felt so like just tired and so sore and my hands hurt so bad. And part of what that comes along with that feeling is that like, okay, I'm at peace. There's some contentment. I let go of what I needed to let go of. On the other end of it, it was like, was that too much? I feel like a zombie, all those sorts of things. So I think there's going to be a spectrum of experiences in the rage room. And yes, going into it, I knew that there would be some things I didn't know and wouldn't know what the experience was really like. I guess leaving the rage room that next day, I just, the body element for me was just so much. So I probably went too hard. So yeah, that was my experience. And I just thought it was interesting to share because, you know, this was our first event, the rage room. And when we first decided to host this, it's not like any of us had ever done a rage room. So we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. But the whole point was we were able to write on the breakables before we went in what we were letting go of after doing the reflection exercise. And then we were able to smash that and let go of things. And I want to highlight, I think sometimes that can be healthy to let go of things in that physical way. I read an article not too long ago that was saying like when people vent about their anger or vent about other people, that's not helpful. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting. So this might be a good helpful alternative for people who like to vent and to release some more, you know, of that anger or rage. And we talked about the difference between anger and rage, right? Mm-hmm. And then one of the other questions, and I'll stop here, but one of the questions that came up for me in that, okay, so we have anger, we have rage. When does rage turn to hate? Because mm-hmm. I always thought like anger and hate can kind of go together. And I kind of always skip to that like rage piece. And it made me really just curious about, you know, how can we help people who are spiraling in rage or things like that so there isn't hate? And mm-hmm. I don't know what that looks like and everything, but that was another question that came up for me after doing the rage room.
Well, it sounds like quite an experience. And the things that really came up for me listening to you was like the beginning, middle, and end. So the beginning reflection, then the actual activity where you were writing the things that you were going to let go, and then you let loose physically on those objects that kind of represented the things that you were going to let go. And just the destruction of the objects. And so it feels like they're kind of standing in for the destruction of whatever it is you're letting go. So that's really interesting because it's different from what I think of when I think of letting something go. And that's something I think would be really interesting to explore in this conversation as well. And how letting go, the act of letting go and the expression of that act, is it the destruction of it, like the destruction of the objects and like the physical force that one exerts on those objects and the effect that it has on your body as well, which is really interesting what you said, the after effect of that. Just like going to the gym and like really, or like going into a sport after a long break, your body really feels that, you are more aware of the muscles that are working when you're doing certain things after a long break. You go back into it and oh, there's all these places that are sore that maybe you weren't aware of that were actually working at the time. Like you mentioned your hands, and that's something that I wouldn't expect to be sore hands, but yeah, that makes sense. If you're gripping that bat for a long period of time, yeah, your hands are going to be sore. And then the really interesting thing that you talked about, Aaron, which I would love to explore more, is that feeling of happiness, or that feeling that you had after the fact. And that brought to mind this term that comes up when we talk about like Greek theater, the idea of catharsis, and how with Greek tragedies, the audience goes through a whole range of emotions, and it's very intense. The experience in Greek tragedies is so intense because everyone dies. Everyone dies in Greek tragedies, right? So you get you identify with the characters, and then you watch the whole arc, and it's if there's a sense of just going through everything. And the idea of catharsis is that you are pretty much spent, that you've gone through all of those strong, intense emotions, and it produces in the audience a release, which can also be experienced as exhaustion. It can be experienced as sometimes elation, like this release of all of that of that intense emotion. And that's one thing that I thought of, like you go through this experience where you have this anger and rage, and you're experiencing this what would be considered maybe I wouldn't say negative, but it's a very intense emotion. And then at the end, you get this feeling of happiness or maybe release. And so exploring that more and kind of seeing the journey and how releasing things, letting things go, can often lead to a sense of elation or relief. So that's also something that came up while you were talking. And the other thing that really piqued my interest was the communal aspect of it. You were doing this together, and you had your different pieces that you brought in to the room, which is also very interesting to me. And then the idea of the toilet, like that's interesting. Why a toilet and toilet glue? Never even knew that there was even such a thing. And the things that you can find out when you're dismantling and destroying things. Common objects like drawers from a bed, or toilets that are very common in almost all households. So the things that we take for granted, that when we open it up, when we crack it open, when we smash it, things that we weren't even aware of, that we didn't even consider, like toilet glue, and the messiness of it too. There's so many layers to this, and there's just so much here that we can really play with and explore. What's coming up for you, Erin, in my retelling of the things that I observed as you talk?
I think first it's the letting go that you talked about. And I think what I've observed in working with various clients and my own kids and my own self and my own family members, there's such a range of how people can let go of things. Some people just naturally let go of things easier, right? And I can see that between my two kids. I have a daughter who, while we were away this weekend, really struggled with a loose tooth and only would like keep a paper towel in her mouth because she wouldn't let anybody touch it. She's very scared that it would hurt. She doesn't want to let go of it, doesn't want to let go of her youth in that way, right? And so it became this very dramatic, long process that in the end caused her a lot more pain than my other daughter, who would have been like, I'm going to take this out right now, you know? And so I just want to honor for those people who are like my first daughter, right? Who are holding on to things that tightly. We see you through this process too, and know that it's probably not as easy as for some other people. And that's due to a lot of things, due to trauma, lived experience, personality, DNA, all of it, right? And so I think this could be a good exercise for people like my first daughter, who could use that catharsis to let go, to have a little bit more support and scaffolding through that all. On the other end of it, I don't know if she would ever do something like that. I don't know if she'd ever be interested in something like that. It's just something that's really kind of sparked my interest to explore like this theme of letting go more. Because when we can let go or acquiesce or be receptive to what is, I feel it makes our lives that much easier to live, right? And it's always a challenge in the grief process with letting go because it's very complex and everybody's on their own timeline. And then there are all these other added layers as well. But when we can get to that piece of letting go, we get to a place of peace. We get to a place of the other person has that was left behind or who died. They have peace. We have peace, that sort of thing. And so the process is just trusting that process. And the rage room is one tool within that process to use. So the letting go really stuck out to me. And then the way you peel back all the layers of like, oh, there's this, and then the messiness of breaking something open. And then all of this, I'm like, yes, there's so many, I don't know what you call them, themes or metaphors or nuggets of wisdom in there. But I agree. Like when you don't know what you're going to, as you're going through any process, you don't know what it is for sure going to be like. You don't know what's going to come up. And then this idea of breaking something open, that's a shift. That's a shift in energy. That's a shift in the materials. And so there will be a shift. Like it's all just all about embracing that change, embracing that shifting season. And it doesn't mean that you're apathetic when you let go. It just means that there's a way for you to live more fully and purposefully when you can let some of these things go. And I like the idea of unlayering it, trying to focus on an intention in there. Maybe I'm going to let this specific thing go and see how that goes over the course of time. And then maybe going back to the rage room, like, okay, maybe I'm going to try to say and letting go and see what happens and what comes up. So I think there's a lot to play with in there as well when it comes to the rage room. But I think one of the themes, as LaShawn so well articulated all the different layers, is it's really helpful to have somebody like a coach who can help you process the layers of what is really happening and how that can be supportive to you as an individual. So yeah, I think there's so much there. I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah, there's so much there. And then just to hold on to this letting go piece, because I think this is a theme that comes up a lot in the episodes that we have done in the past. Letting go comes up a lot. And I think one thing that really stands out to me about letting go, and it goes back to the story you told about your first daughter who was just holding on to that tooth and how that kind of lengthened the time. And that too could just be part of the process as well, the going through those emotions. And there is no real timeline when it comes to loss, because loss of a tooth and knowing, yeah, this is inevitable. My tooth is loose. There's another tooth coming in. This is going to happen whether I like it or not. You know, this kind of thing where, you know, this is inevitable loss that's coming. And how do you let that go? How do you accept or receive that? And I think that's also very interesting to me as well, and how different people approach or go through that process differently. And there are so many different ways that the process is going to show up for a person. And I think the most important thing, and this is something I learned from you, Erin, from just, you know, talking to you about grief and loss and how there is no right way to do it. And I tend to judge the way that I handle things or the way that I approach things. And I have a tendency to compare to others. And that person was able to do that, to get through that differently. I'm not seeing this the way that that person is. And then I start to think that there's something wrong with me. And so just the story of your two daughters, how you compared how they respond differently to a loose tooth, really brought home to me the fact that we're all doing this in different ways. We're all very unique in how we approach life, how we approach loss, how we approach letting go, and how the idea of embracing that, embracing the fact that we all see things differently. There is no right way to do these things. And that kind of comes back to the role of the coach or the role of thought partners, like coaches, really good friends that we trust and love and we know have our best interests at heart and are this mutual idea that each other's needs are equally important. And so we honor and hold those things equally in a relationship. And so when we're working with thought partners, therapists, professionals who are professionals in the sense that they understand the process and they're able to work with you and help you navigate the process, especially if it's your first time, because that's another thing that came up in this whole experience in the rage room. It was everyone's first time in the rage room. So that's another interesting thing that I'd love to ask you about, Erin. Like, what was it like being in that experience with people who were doing it at the for the first time? You're kind of pioneers in that way. So I wonder how that was for the four of you. And it's the idea that when we have someone who understands these processes, these that we understand that this is a journey, that we understand and we honor that there's no right way. I think when we're working with someone who comes to an experience that's new for everyone, including the coach, including the person who understands processes and understands how we as humans might process things, the way that we perceive things. We have a lot of tools in our toolbox. We have a lot of experience with that. We've studied that. And so we come in with perspectives and knowledge around that. And that can really help add insight into an experience that's happening, but at the same time, hold the very real fact that this is new and that the person who is undergoing the process or who's going through the process is very personal to them and therefore very unique for them. And they are the experts in that process and how they're going to approach it. Because then the person, the thought partner, the coach can ask powerful questions that are going to raise the person's awareness to their own strengths, to their own strategies that they've used in the past, and how they might be able to apply it to this new experience that's happening. To be able to recognize patterns, to be able to recognize how we uniquely approach life and how we uniquely bring different skills and knowledge to situations that arise in our lives. So that's one thing that a thought partner or coach can do. So I want to go back to that question about experiencing something for the first time. And this is a first time experience for you, Erin, and I'm just wondering, for you personally going in as a coach and your role as the facilitator, the facilitator of the process where you led that piece before you went into the room. Like, what were your thoughts like coming in? And I'm sure your group like talked about kind of planned how you were going to do it. So what did that look like?
Yeah, I like that question because it definitely shifted. So I had a reflection exercise planned out that was quite a bit lo longer than what I actually ended up doing. I could tell that people needed to experience this. When you go into something, it's nice to have some direction. It's nice to have some reflection, but a lot of that often will come after the process too. So my reflection exercise that I had planned went from like this to very, very short and nimble and just kind of picking up on the energy and what people seem to be wanting and needing. And so that was a big kind of surprise for me. And then going into the room, I guess I didn't realize this, but when I'm hitting something over and over, it was kind of scary to one of the individuals. Like that was a lot Right. And so that was another piece that I wasn't really coming up with, like predicting what happened. I just thought that, you know, everybody's kind of in their own zone and just kind of, you know, doing their thing. But it's so easy to pick up on the collective, pick up on what's around you. And as the room went on, I very much experienced that firsthand, where I got way too many senses, like way over, what would you call that? Exposed to the senses. So that I ended a couple minutes early, because I'm like, the sounds were too much, the lights, like all of it. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And so listening into our bodies and trusting ourselves and trusting that. I think that's so important, because a lot of us have been socialized to not be able to do that. We're not really listen to our bodies. I mean, it's never been something that has been a priority, really. It's starting to improve societally, but still, it seems like that's been a key piece that's left people with a lot of challenges. And so I think this room really brings up that concept of, how do you listen to your body? You know, what is it saying? Those sorts of things. So that was another thing that came up that was a little bit different than what I had expected. And then was like, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense, knowing what we know about the coaching process and that. And then I guess the last part of it was coming out of it, you know, having a chance to reflect as a group. Everybody was seemingly, there was a sense of like happiness, like everybody wanted to chit chat. And then there's also a sense of fatigue. There's like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired after this. This is all I can do. I can't do this last reflection, right? So I had in my mind that there'd be this beautiful beginning reflection, this beautiful closing reflection. And I had to really contain them and make them much smaller than I initially had planned. So that was a big shift for me. Yeah.
I love that piece about how things, you go into a situation, especially a situation you've never experienced before, with all these plans. Like, you've got this beautiful reflection in your mind and then this great closing. And then you have to respond to the energies that are coming in, because it's not just about you, right? And so that's another beautiful thing about coaching, is that our training and how we learn to pivot very quickly to and respond to the way that the client or the people that we're working with, what they're bringing in, because it's a co-creation. And because it's co-creation, we have to adjust to our original idea. Like, for example, we go in wanting this long, beautiful reflection, and then we've got to very quickly pivot to a shortened form of that. But it's equally as powerful, if you think about it, because you have this reflection in mind, which is really important, because you go in with a plan and you adjust. And I think that's really reflective of life in general. We come in with plans, and then life happens and tells us, well, you know, this isn't going to work the way you thought it was. And you adjust, right? You adjust. You're aware of what people are bringing in, what their needs are. And there's just so much that we as coaches need to take in, you know, we need to be aware of, and we need to be prepared for. And I think one of the ways that we're prepared to pivot like that, and one thing that is just to be able to tap into ourselves and to know what's going on with us, so that we can be more aware and present in the situation, and we're able to pivot and adjust accordingly to what is showing up in the situation itself. So that's another interesting piece, like, about coaching, how we as coaches need to prepare ourselves to be open and receptive, so that we don't allow the things that are going on inside of ourselves to get in the way of being present and being able to respond to the needs of the group or the needs of the client. And it sounds like you were very aware and very open. So I want to, like, kind of go back, kind of rewind a little bit back, because now that kind of makes me think, so Erin, what did you do mentally and physically to prepare for the moment that you were able to pivot so beautifully and respond to the needs, like shorten your reflection? What did you do going in before it even started?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time reflecting in my mind. And then I did write out a whole exercise as well. But then I spent some time there before the event started, just sitting in the space and feeling what the space had to offer, what was coming up for me in this space, what might be coming up for people as they enter this space, how this is a very different space than, you know, the groups that I run or the rooms that I see my clients and those sorts of things. So I think it was just, it's interesting. It was like, part of it was like to prepare, I had to do both. I had to be very aware of all the different types of senses and everything that was going on, but I also had to let go. And getting to that concept of letting go, and the way that you just spoke to before you asked me this question, as you were talking, I really just got this vision of, we have this false belief that we are in charge of our own destinies, right? Like, but when you bring that down and ask how that relates to people's own lives, that's when that philosophy tends to crumble, because of, we're interconnected. We are always learning new experiences, gaining new knowledge, that sort of thing. There may be a spiritual lens for a lot of people on that take too. So we are, right? We make choices, but we also aren't as in control as we think we are. And I think that's the other piece that really shows up in the rage room. And who knew, like, by you asking all these coaching session questions throughout this podcast, who knew that the rage room would be such a tool for the coaching process, would be a metaphor for unwrapping the layers of what happens when people make change and go through a process, and recognizing it's not linear, and recognizing that there's other people that you're connected to and all of that. So I don't know. I feel like throughout this whole episode, there's also this other layer of you asking these really effective coaching questions that really brought out the experience, so that when somebody listens to this episode, I feel like they'll have an understanding of kind of what they're getting into with the rage room, but more importantly, how that relates to themselves.
I love how you talked about being in the space and really feeling into the space and how it was very different from any space that you facilitated in before, and that you took the time to understand what was going on with you and also your relationship to the space. And I think that's something that when you were talking about it, the first thing I thought about is that's a teacher thing too, because we both have background in teaching. And I know as a teacher that when I went into a classroom, I took time to really think about, okay, how are the desks arranged? How is this activity that I had in my mind going to work? And there was a relationship with myself and the space. And it also affected the way that I decided to conduct something. So I think there's a little bit of a teacher part to that as well as a facilitator and a coach, because it also plays into being a coach as well. But I'm not sure if, because I was a teacher before I was a coach, so I'm not sure how is that part of being a coach or being a teacher, because the space, really interesting, because environments, the spaces that we're in, the situations that we're in, and that's one of the things that piques my interest, because how do we interact with our environment, with our space, with spatial relationships, with the way things are arranged? When you first described the rage room, you mentioned almost all the senses. You talked about the smell of sawdust, what things looked like, the lighting, the walls, the writing on the walls, and that some of the writing on the walls was very full of like hateful language, and how that affected you, and then how you were grateful to the owner for covering that, which is another interesting thing. There's all these like interesting layers to this whole experience. There's so many things in this experience that just really reflect life in general, like how we interact with our environment. That came up. That was so interesting. There's so many aspects of our lives. And the other thing about control, the idea, that's the letting go, I think, the letting go of the illusion of control and how we have control of our own destinies. And I think what came up for me was the idea of self-determination. We have self-determination. We know where we want to go. And we have this idea, this plan of where we want to go. But like you said, there are other pieces outside of our control, like other people, their circumstances, their time constraints, spatial constraints. There's all these things that are outside of our control. And I think one of the things that we can learn from this experience is how do we move with the pieces of life that are outside of our control? We maintain our self-determination, the idea of where we want to go, the desire of where we want to go, and we adjust and we pivot based on what's coming up in our environment, what's coming up in our social environment, like in terms of our relationships. And, you know, if you're in a long-term relationship, you have a life partner, you might have a certain idea of where you want to go in life. And you need to take into account your partner because you have a life partner and they might have different ideas. You might have the same aspirations, but a different idea of how to get there. And there's that idea of, okay, what you want and what you think is going to be the right way to go. And then what your partner wants and what your partner thinks is the right way to go. And you just kind of have to do that dance of, okay, so my partner thinks this is the way to go. And we all have the same aspirations, but how do we get there in a way that's satisfactory for both of us? And there's all this compromise and self-awareness is so important to be able to know how you're responding to this space or how you're responding to the situation, which gives you a better ability to be aware of how the other person might be responding and be curious about that and ask those questions like, huh, I'm feeling this way about this. How is my partner feeling about this? Or how is my colleague feeling about this? Or how is my child feeling about this? Or how is this person that, you know, I'm talking to in a business level, like, for example, customer and salesperson, like being able to really understand how things are affecting you and then being able to hold in the space that the other person does also have a piece here and being curious about, you know, what's going on with them as well. So there's so much here in this conversation, which was surprising. Because you think, oh, this event happened, we'll talk about it and then go from there. But there's so much in the event itself, so much in the experience that you're sharing that reflects life. And it's such an exciting and interesting look at so many things. And there's so many themes that come up in our episodes anyway. So this has been really great.
Yeah, I really enjoy listening to you and what everything, how that relates to life circumstances outside of the rage room. And it'd be interesting for us to interview each of the rage room participants and hear their take too. So maybe that'll be something we can try to do eventually. And so I guess takes us to our coaching nugget of wisdom. And one of the themes that I'm getting is oftentimes we think we're going to learn before we do something, go into the event, and that's it. But one thing that I'm really starting to feel into today through this conversation is just go with something and then maybe reflect on all of these types of coaching questions after. And that gives you so much more information for how you approach your life, approach your world, and how you want to move into, you know, your next chapter of life, your next year, your next week.
Yeah, there's so many things that are coming up. But the one thing that's really coming up is how new experiences can reveal many things to us. And it can open up so many different places where we can explore different parts of our lives and different meaningful themes in our lives. And I think new experiences can really open up deep and broad conversations about ourselves and our lives. So my coaching nugget of wisdom would be open to new experiences and what they reveal about ourselves and our lives.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.